Good morning. Well, today we begin a new quarterly and a study of the last half of Genesis. We went through the first half of Genesis in the September, October, November quarter of 2015, so it's been just over 3 years. The title of today's lesson is The Deceiver, and it covers material from Genesis 25:19 to 27:40. The quarterly's author gave the lesson a subtitle of God Accomplishes His Purposes Despite His Covenant People's Sin. And I might add, He accomplishes His purposes despite any sin. Before we get too far into today's material, let's take a minute or two and review where we were when we left off November 3 years ago. The previous study in Genesis ended with chapter 25, verse 18. As we approached the end of that study, you may remember Abraham, formerly known as Abram, had been told by God to move to a new land, which I will show you. God was showing Abraham to have faith in him. You will remember that when we went through lesson 10 in our just finished quarterly, James had mentioned in chapter 2, verse 21 through 24, about the faith Abraham had shown by offering his son Isaac as a sacrifice, when God had instructed him to do so. But Abraham had demonstrated his faith in God much earlier, by following his instructions to move, mentioned in the previous paragraph. Abraham had married Sarah, and for a long period they didn't have children. Abraham's wife Sarah arranged for him to have a child by her maidservant Hagar, and that happened. Ishmael was born. Then Sarah became pregnant. Abraham's first legitimate son Isaac was born. Sarah died and was buried in Hebron. The idea of testing, as used in these chapters, was not that God was testing Abraham, but that he was putting challenges before Abraham to prove his character. Abraham was passing with flying colors. In chapter 24, Abraham arranged for one of his servants to get a wife for Isaac from their own homeland, so Isaac wouldn't marry any woman from the Canaanite territory. Most of chapter 24 tells the story of how Rebekah was selected and became the wife of Isaac. Chapter 25 opens by telling us that Abraham took another wife, Keturah. Verse 2 lists 6 sons she bore him. Another commentary I read told that each of these 6 sons became nations, and each of those nations were hostile towards Israel and each other. Sort of sounds like the Middle East today, doesn't it? Verse 5 and 6 tell us that Abraham gave everything to Isaac, thus setting him apart as a child of promise. Isaac inherited everything from his father, including God's promise to make his descendants a great nation. As a boy, Isaac did not resist his father prepared to sacrifice him. As a man, he gladly accepted a wife that others chose for him. Through Isaac, we learn to let God guide our lives and to place his will ahead of our own. Before his death, Abraham gave apparently substantial gifts to each of his sons or the concubines, which he had, and sent them off to the lands of the east. Verse 7 through 11 tell of Abraham's death. He was 175 years old when he died, and he was buried in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which Abraham had bought, and which was where his wife Sarah was buried. Abraham passed from the scene being one of the most important men of the Bible. He is mentioned 70 times in the New Testament alone. Only Moses is mentioned more, 80 times. Abraham, as a man of God, stands unrivaled. Under the most exalted and perfect of all dispensations, the gospel of Jesus, he is proposed and recommended as the model and pattern according to which the faith, obedience, and perseverance of the followers of the Messiah are to be formed. Our lesson material today begins with Genesis 25:19, which according to my Bible is where the story of Isaac begins. As mentioned a moment ago, Abraham was 175 years old when he died. He left behind 2 sons, Ishmael and Isaac, as recorded in Genesis 25:7-9. Because Ishmael was not the promised son, as we were told in Genesis 17:18-19, Isaac received God's blessing, which is recorded in 25:11. This included the covenant God made with Abraham. Isaac married relatively late in life, and his wife Rebekah was chosen by his father, and she was childless. 20 years after their marriage, the Lord answered Isaac's prayers and gave the couple twins. In an unusual twist of convention, God revealed that the firstborn son, Esau, would serve the younger brother, Jacob. Just as an FYI, the name Jacob meant he grasps the heel or he cheats or supplants. As the two boys grew up, dramatic differences became apparent. Esau developed a great skill as an outdoorsman and hunter. By contrast, Jacob preferred a more domestic life. Not surprisingly, Esau's father, Isaac, favored Esau over his younger brother. On the other hand, Rebekah, Isaac's wife, favored Jacob. Interestingly, at the same time, defects in both sons' characters manifest themselves. Genesis 25:27-34 tells us that Esau traded his entire birthright for a single bowl of stew. Jacob, the brother, demonstrated a willingness to take advantage of family members' frailties for his own personal gain. In verses 1-6 of chapter 6, God reaffirms Isaac as heir to the covenant with Abraham. Verses 7-12 tells us that Isaac duplicated his father's worst behavior by claiming that his wife was his sister. Verse 23-35 record that Isaac found favor with God, and this eventually led to a covenant with his neighbors regarding water and water use rights. Chapter 27 records the story of Jacob getting the blessing of his father Isaac. All of our highlighted verses for today's lesson are in chapter 27. The Quarterly's author broke today's lesson into three sections. The first section is called A Deceitful Son, and it covers verses 18-23. Verses 18-20 read, and here Jacob is about to speak to his father. When he came to his father, he said, "My father." And he, the father, Isaac, answered, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Jacob replied to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How did you ever find it so quickly, my son?" And he, Jacob, replied, "Because the Lord, your God, made it happen for me." Aware of the fact that his father's blessing of Esau would nullify his scheme to acquire the majority of his father's possessions, Jacob complied with his mother's directions. He pretended to be his older brother. Jacob approached his father and greeted him appropriately as "my father." Isaac's exact health condition is not specifically known, but at the time this happened, it was believed that he was dying, even though, in fact, he lived many more years. Nevertheless, his age and health condition blunted his senses. His vision was impaired and his body was weak. His initial, "Here I am," seems to be a natural reaction of a man blind to his surroundings. His inability to recognize his son's voice emphasizes his feebleness and mental gullibility. Jacob answered his father's inquiry with an outright, deliberate lie. "I am Esau, your firstborn." Jacob's mother had instructed him to deceive his father, though this did not justify his behavior. Honesty is a fundamental characteristic of God and consequently God's people, that's us. God had promised Rebekah that Jacob would overshadow his older brother in Genesis 25:23. This scheme she cooked up with Jacob exposed her lack of faith in God. Instead of waiting on God to keep his word, she took matters into her own hands. Her premature action betrayed her marital relationship and violated her responsibility as a mother to teach her children honesty and integrity. But Isaac cannot be resolved of guilt. He nurtured an unhealthy atmosphere at home by his obvious show of favoritism for Esau. It seems almost impossible that he was ignorant of God's revelation concerning Jacob's role in the family. Yet his apparent appetite for wild game governed his conduct more than the divine mandate. Rather than the partnership God intended for husband and wife, Isaac and Rebekah became opponents in the sibling conflict between their sons. Having already lied about his identity, Jacob next lied about his actions. He asserted, "I have done as you told me." This was a false statement. Isaac had not told Jacob to do anything. Unfortunately, Jacob had not even carried out Isaac's instructions to Esau. The meal Jacob brought it to his father was domesticated goat, not wild game. Jacob was keenly aware of the risk involved in his mother's scheme. If Isaac discovered Jacob's true identity before the blessing, he surely would curse him instead. Words are powerful forces. They cannot be recalled once spoken. Therefore, Jacob was anxious for his father to bless him. He exhorted his father to arise from his bed and taste the phony game he had brought. Eating a delicious meal seems to have been a ritual part of the ceremony that preceded the final blessing. The quickness of his son's success in acquiring the game for the meal raised suspicion in Isaac's mind. In this era, hunting wild game was a slow, time-consuming process. The animals hunted did not range close to human habitation. The hunter often traveled many miles searching for game. Weapons lacked long-range effectiveness for killing, and stalking over long distances was common. Once a potential target was identified, the hunter had to creep close enough to strike. Many things could go wrong, and if they did, the hunter would have to start over. After a successful hunt, the hunter had to lug the dead animal back to his home. This was likely a slow and exhausting trip because of the weight of the dead animal. Instead of this long process, Jacob walked over to a nearby flock, selected two goats, and killed them. Preparation of wild game and goat was virtually identical, so Jacob was done long before his brother returned. Esau had actually gone out to hunt wild game, as his father had instructed him to do, to prepare a meal of wild game. Jacob's showing up so quickly with a meal of wild game caused Isaac to question him, "How did you ever find it so quickly?" In order to pacify his father's curiosity regarding the time discrepancy, Jacob's lies led to blasphemy, as he attributed his unlikely speed to the Lord. However, it's important to note that Jacob distanced himself from God by saying, "Your God." He was designating the Lord as Isaac's God, not his. Verses 21 through 23 read, "Then Isaac said to Jacob, 'Please come closer so I can touch you, my son. Are you really my son Esau or not?' So Jacob came closer to his father Isaac. And when he, Isaac, touched him, he said, 'The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau.' He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he, Isaac, blessed him." It's pretty clear in these verses that Isaac was doubtful of his son's identity and likely his integrity. The voice claimed that he was Esau, but the sounds and circumstances indicated that it was someone else. By requesting that the person, Jacob, come closer, Isaac sought to take a closer look at the person claiming to be Esau. Isaac's impaired vision prevented a visual identification. His hearing suggested the speech was not Esau's voice. To try to clarify this confusion, Isaac turned to touch, here in verse 22, and later to smell, as we'll see when we get to verse 27. The verses prior to our highlighted verses, Jacob's mother had disguised him. Jacob seemed confident that his mother's disguise would fool his father. Although absent from the explanation in the text, wearing Esau's clothing trapped Esau's body odors, satisfying Isaac's aroma sensitivity. The man with Isaac, at the moment, smelled like Esau, but he sounded like Jacob. The final test would be touch. The two men were distinctly different in physical attributes. Esau was hairy, whereas Jacob had smooth skin. Esau believed that if he could touch the person's arms, he could determine the person's true identity. Isaac failed to consider his wife's cunning. Rebekah was acutely aware of the differences in her two sons. She took the skin of the goats killed to prepare the meal for Isaac and fashioned it into two tight wrappings that covered Jacob's forearms. The goat hair replicated Esau's hairy forearms to the touch. Both Jacob and Rebekah were confident that the ailing Isaac would fall for their trick and bless Jacob. Rebekah's efforts achieved their purpose. Her favorite son duped her husband and fleeced, no pun intended, his twin brother. Isaac rubbed his fingers over Jacob's arm and unexpectedly felt hair. As a result of this, Isaac blessed his deceitful son. The word the Hebrew word to bless means to bestow with a powerful success, longevity, and prosperity. In essence, Isaac pronounced that Jacob would receive all of the things God had promised to Abraham and to Isaac. God's promise to Rebekah had come true, but she had acquired its fulfillment by ungodly means. Rebekah and Jacob's deceit caused tragic consequences. Verses 41 through 44, later in this chapter and beyond our highlighted verses, tells us that upon discovery of what happened, Esau's rage was ignited. Jacob fled his home and Rebekah never saw him again, thus proving that contrary to the popular proverb, the end does not justify the means. Wrong behavior always is sin in God's eyes. Believers, that's us, are to act with integrity, honesty, and transparency when dealing with others all the time. A deceiving father is the next section, and it covers verses 24 through 27. Verses 24 and 25 read, "Again he," that's Isaac, "asked, 'Are you really my son Esau?' And Jacob, replied, 'I am.' Then he," that's Isaac, "said, 'Bring it closer to me and let me eat some of my son's game so that I can bless you.' Jacob brought it closer to him and he ate. He brought wine and he drank." Interestingly, verse 24 tells us that Isaac still harbored misgivings about his son's true identity. Once more, Isaac asked, "Are you really my son Esau?" Again, Jacob lied to his father. This piercing verse reeks with family failures. In Exodus 20:12 and Ephesians 6:1-2, we learn very pointedly that God expects children, regardless of their age, to honor their parents. Nothing in Jacob's conduct even hints of respect for his father. At the same time, parents must not put unjustified pressure or stress on their children. Ephesians 6:3 tells us that they are to be trained in godliness. The favoritism shown by Isaac to Esau and Rebekah to Jacob encouraged self-centeredness instead of godliness by each young man. Sadly, it also spawned a rivalry not only between the sons, but between the parents. Such contention is the opposite of God's edict stated in Genesis 2:24 that a husband and wife are to become one in flesh. As believers, we should always be a living illustration of the relationship between Christ and His church. That's not possible if competition is present. Moving to verse 25, we determine that the precise protocol involved in the blessing ceremony has been lost in the 4,000 years since Isaac blessed Jacob. Nevertheless, we have sufficient information to understand the event's significant components. The blessing ceremony was more than a brief statement of, "May the Lord bless you." It was much longer and had several components. Apparently, eating a formal meal was a significant part of the ceremony. Meat was not a part of the ancient Hebrews' daily diet. It was only eaten on special occasions. Isaac instructed Jacob to proceed with the meal. He referred to the main course as "my son's game." The Hebrew word translated "game" denotes any meat obtained by hunting. The term reflects Isaac's early instructions to Esau in Genesis 27:3-4, and his eagerness to taste whatever game the son might have killed. Jacob brought his father goat meat Rebekah had prepared. Isaac ate it without questioning its authenticity. Jacob also gave him wine to drink. Chemically, wine is a depressant. When it's consumed in sufficient quantities, it will reduce a person's cognitive ability. Serving wine may have been incorporated into Rebekah's plot to suppress Isaac's ability to think clearly. Wine was a common drink at mealtime in this era, so the reference to wine was likely to emphasize that this was supposed to be a joyful occasion. Verses 26 and 27 read, "Then his father Isaac said to him, 'Please come closer and kiss me, my son.' So he," Isaac, "came closer and kissed him. When Isaac smelt his clothes, he blessed him and said, 'Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field the Lord has blessed.'" Apparently, another formality in the blessing ceremony was the kiss. The kiss was a customary gesture of greeting and departure in the region. Here it marks the closure of the meal portion of the blessing ceremony. A kiss between close relatives contained a connotation of acceptance and love. Jacob's compliance with his father's appeal for a kiss emphasized the despicable nature of his treachery. Repeatedly, he overtly lied to his father in order to manipulate him for personal gain. Jacob's desired outcome completely contradicted his stated intentions of his father's actions. Nothing in this episode reflects a son's love, respect, and acceptance of his father. As Isaac embraced his son, he sniffed the garments his wife had given Jacob to wear. They belonged to Esau. They were impregnated with the aroma of the outdoors. Odor is a potent sense, and the smell of Esau triggered a powerful response from Isaac. Isaac's blessing here was a continuation of the blessing begun in verse 23. For the first time, Isaac's words are recorded in the text. The smell of my son refers to Esau's scent and implies that Isaac's doubts about the person's identity had been removed. He was now confident that the person in the room was Esau. The smell of a field recalls his earlier instructions to Esau in 27:3, that the Lord has blessed attributed the productivity of the field to Yahweh. God endued the land with the power to grow plants, and these plants fed the game that Esau hunted for Isaac to eat. How was Isaac so easily deceived? His preferential love for the older son led to his deception. He heard in verse 24, tasted in verse 25, touched in verse 26, and smelled in verse 27 what he was looking for, Esau. Because of his unrelenting favoritism, he believed because he wanted to believe. Believers must guard against favoritism, knowing that showing favoritism leads to personal deception. Galatians 3:28 tells us that Christ died for all believers, and that gives them and each one of us equal value before the Lord. A stolen blessing is the last section of the lesson, and it covers verses 28 and 29. Verse 28 reads, "May God give you from the dew of the sky and from the riches of the land an abundance of grain and new wine." Finishing what he started in verse 23, Isaac blessed the wrong son. Verse 28 highlights the blessing of God's personal provision at harvest. Interestingly, as a subject matter, this is in itself is remarkable. The patriarchs were not farmers, they were nomadic herdsmen. The pronoun you in verse 28 is singular. However, when Isaac spoke to Jacob, his target was much broader than his son. Jacob represented the future nation into which his descendants eventually would grow. Isaac was an extremely rich man. In Genesis 14:14, we're told that his father Abraham once fielded a victorious army at his own expense. Isaac inherited that wealth and prestige. The region's city-state kings recognized him as one of their peers. But Isaac's most valuable possession was being heir to God's promise to Abraham. One component of that promise was that their descendants would gain ownership of Canaan. So in verse 28, Isaac called for God to make the land productive. Two resources provide the necessary ingredients to an abundant harvest: dependable water and fertile soil. Only about 25 inches of rain fall each year in Canaan. Since rainfall is restricted to a few months annually, dew served as a year-round source of moisture. The pairing of sky and land represented the fullness of nature. Grain was the main resource for making bread, the primary staple in the ancient Israeli diet. New wine came from the first juice of the fruit. Picking the first fruit of a crop normally foreshadows a successful harvest. Isaac was petitioning God to provide the future nation with the essentials of life. Verse 29 reads, "May people serve you and nations bow in worship to you. Be master over your relatives. May your mother's sons bow in worship to you. Those who curse you will be cursed, and those who bless you will be blessed." Isaac continued his blessing of Jacob. It's still very apparent that he doesn't know he's blessing Jacob and not Esau. He was not content with his sons just being a successful landowner. He wanted him to rule over peoples and nations and his relatives. The phrase, your mother's sons, must be understood in context. Rebekah's only sons were Esau and Jacob. Thus, your mother's sons denoted Esau and his descendants because Isaac was blessing Jacob, even though he thought he was blessing Esau. In fact, the nation of Edom was descended from Esau, and historically, Israel dominated Edom during most periods. The last sentence in this verse, those who curse you will be cursed, and those who bless you will be blessed, repeats God's promise to Abraham recorded in Genesis 12:3. Y'all listen up, the next sentences are important. This quotation is critical to correctly interpreting this episode. God unmistakably indicated that this promise would be fulfilled through Sarah's child. Isaac was her only child, hence the heir of that promise. God himself reaffirmed that Isaac was heir to that covenant. Likewise, God's promise to Rebekah implied Jacob was heir to God's covenant promise. Hence, God's word was at stake in this incident. The biblical text does not justify or approve anyone's behavior in this affair. Rather, it emphasizes that God's purpose cannot be thwarted by human behavior. God is sovereign over his creation. He can and will bring to pass his supreme purpose despite the selfish actions of a or any sinful person. Let's close with a prayer. Lord, forgive our sins and make us thankful for all the many blessings you send our way. Lord, as we move into this Christmas season, please help us to remember why we celebrate Christmas. Lord, help us to understand your plan and to always be a facilitator of your plan and not an impediment to it. Help us to learn to always let you guide our lives and always put your will above our own. In Jesus' name, amen.